Drake London stepped up to the plate and showed he's capable of being the Falcons' number one receiver and possibly even the one of the best receivers in the NFL. But do the Falcons have their number two guy? Is that an in-house guy like Alamide Zaccheaus? Or do they need to look elsewhere this offseason?
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, a.k.a. Sirius Black, a.k.a. Mr. Drew, and, of course, the very humble host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And this episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of the NFL. Make every moment more by visiting FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. Guys, we thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day, Monday through Friday, on a variety of podcast platforms, including Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, and YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to Locked On Falcons on YouTube, and you'll get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. And make sure you check us out on your Roku and Amazon Fire TV as part of Locked On Sports Atlanta. Just download that Locked On Sports Atlanta app, and you'll be able to get Locked On Falcons, Locked On Braves, as well as other Locked On Sports Atlanta shows on your Roku and Amazon Fire TV. So, guys, we're continuing our positional breakdowns, looking back at the 2022 season in each position group. We've done quarterbacks, we've done running backs, we've done fullbacks. Now we're doing receivers. And, you know, to look back at the season, let's rewind the clock to ahead of the season, back during the summer when we were doing our positional previews in training camp. And we had at that point a question of the summer that we were hoping to get answered by the end of training camp. And we had a question of the season that we were hoping to get answered by the end of the season at each position group. And for the receivers, of course, the question was, is Drake London the Falcon? Can he be a number one receiver for the Falcons? And I'll be honest with you, I don't know if we had a definitive answer on that. I think the answer that we did get is that Drake London can be a very good receiver. Now, whether that's a number one or number two, I think remains to be a little bit seen. Is he one of the top 10 or 15 receivers in the game? Maybe. Is he one of the top 20 to 25, which is probably more in line with the number two? Maybe. Again, probably, yes. I would say probably he is, right? It's just a question of, is he better than that? And I think when you look at like certain metrics like PFF's, you know, yards per route run metric, which I think is a good indicator of who are the best receivers in the league. Right. And we here on Locked On Falcons love that metric because for years it told us that Julio Jones was the best receiver in the league. And he sort of held that championship belt because he finished basically number one in that metric from like 2013 to 2018 every single season. And you look at this past season and look at the top three receivers in that metric. It was Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, A.J. Brown. Jalen Waddle was a very close fourth to A.J. Brown this year. He'll come. We'll circle back to Jalen Waddle in a second. But like I think when you look at those three guys, Hill, Jefferson, and Brown, you probably say, if I ask you who were the best receivers in the league, you know, that feels like an accurate portrayal of who were the best receivers in the league this past year. And when you look at Drake London in that yards per route run metric, he finished 14th this year, ahead of guys like Amari Cooper and Terry McLaurin and Ja'Marr Chase, all guys that we would consider number one receivers. Now, the reason why he was able to finish that highly was because of how strong he finished the season, right? Basically, the final month of the season, after the bye week with Desmond Ridder in the lineup, it basically the Falcons offense became the Drake London show, right? And if you look at those final four games of the year and look at the yards per route run metric, Jalen Waddle was number one, right? Drake London was number two and A.J. Brown was number three. Now, that tells you that Drake London was one of the best receivers in the league for the final month of the season. Now, I don't know if we can take that at face value because, again, Desmond Ridder was basically – If Drake London ain't getting the ball, well, I'm going to force it to him. And you have to factor in that not having Kyle Pitts in the offense certainly led to the Falcons running their offense through Drake London, which led to him getting more targets and a bigger slice of that pie and thus, you know, taking advantage of that, those opportunities and eating his fill of that pie, certainly. But if you sort of look at the point where Kyle Pitts got hurt, which was in that Week 11 game against the Bears, and so look at the Week 12 and onward, yards per route run, Drake London was the number one receiver in the league after that point for the last, you know, six or so games for the Falcons, right? But before that point, if you look through the first 11 games of the season, He looked much more like a number two receiver. In his yards per route run, he ranked 37th among wide receivers. And it's similar to other receivers like Mike Williams and Marquise Brown and Christian Kirk and Mike Evans and Alan Lazard and Gabe Davis, all guys that I think most of us would agree are more like quality number two receivers. Of course, you have Mike Evans in there as well, who many people consider to be a number one, but you would probably argue the last couple of years, it seems like Chris Godwin has slowly sort of taken over that number one mantle, although maybe you say 1A, 1B for the Tampa Bay's receiver duo. But generally speaking, we're talking about high-end number twos, where what Drake London looked like from a production standpoint for the first 11 games of the season. So again, I do wonder how conclusive can we make that? Like when Kyle Pitts is in the offense, Drake London looks like a number two. When Kyle Pitts is out of the offense, Drake London looks like a top-end number one. But again, you know, when we answer this question, is he a one, is he a two, all that stuff and more, I don't know if the answer to that question is that important. I don't think it really matters that much right now. I think it's going to certainly matter, say, 3 years from now when we're looking to pay Drake London. It's going to be important then to answer, is he a one or a two? Because those guys make different types of money. I certainly think in a future as well, if and when the Falcons are, you know, in the postseason, defining Drake London as a number one or number two is going to help this team be able to potentially get over the hump. You look at a team like the Cowboys, who lost this past weekend in the divisional round. I think CeeDee Lamb proved definitively, if there was any doubt up to this point, that he was a number one receiver for them this season. But the Dallas Cowboys issue, you know, especially came to fruition this past weekend. They don't really have a number two. Now, Michael Gallup looked like that guy pre-injury, but hasn't looked the same since then. And so that's when it becomes an important answer to the question is like, okay, well, for Dallas, as part of their self-evaluation, they need to go out there and get a number two if Michael Gallup's not going to be that guy. Right. And so that's where one versus two, I think, really matters when you're doing that self-evaluation. So I would say at the very least, Drake London is a high end number two. I think he showed that this year. And when push came to shove and we needed him to step up and be like a number one, he was that guy. And that gives me hope and optimism that he can continue, that he can pick up where he left off and be that number one receiver for the Falcons in 2023 and beyond. So to answer that question, where does Drake London rank? You know, I don't know exactly, but he's somewhere up there, right? And it's certainly more than good enough for what the Falcons need right now. And so it's not something I'm going to stress about where exactly Drake London is. I'm not going to start any arguments over Drake London in people's wide receiver rankings like we spent, you know, most of the last decade doing when it came to Julio Jones and whatnot. So I think the Falcons can basically operate under the assumption that Drake London is going to be their number two, but that, of course, leads to questions about, okay, who's going to be the number one, right? I mean, I'm sorry. Drake London is their number one. That leaves the questions on who's going to be their number two. That's what I meant. But, you know, we're going to continue talking about that as we continue today and wrap up today's episode. But to put a button on the Drake London thing, for me personally, when I was evaluating Drake London coming out of USC, my biggest concern was the jump in competition from the Pac-12 to the NFL. And I wondered if the physicality of NFL corners was going to be something that he would not deal well with, you know, when he was dominating Pac-12 corners because of that jump in competition. That, for the most part, was a non-issue for me watching Drake London this year. And, you know, those concerns about Drake London having that led me to basically opine that I thought Drake London projected better as more of a big slot receiver. And I can't help but look at some of the numbers and see, well, you know, Drake London's uptick in production in the latter half of the season down the stretch also coincided with him getting a lot more opportunities and a lot more snaps in the slot. And so, again, I think that conversation about is Drake London ideally more of a power slot than a true outside receiver in the same vein of as a Godwin or Bolden or Keenan Allen or Michael Thomas, all guys that can succeed and produce on the outside. But when it comes to creating the real problems and mismatch issues for defenses, often that comes when they're lined up on the inside. So I think we're going to have to have that conversation eventually, but it doesn't necessarily need to be now. But I do think having that conversation does inform us when we do talk about what the Falcons may be looking for ideally at that number two spot. It does inform that conversation. We'll get into that later on today's episode, but coming up, we'll talk about Olamide Zaccheaus. I don't think Olamide Zaccheaus is that number two, but I do think he showed that he could be that number three in the Falcons offense. And we'll talk about some of the things that he's bringing to the table and him getting potentially a new contract, as well as other impending free agents like Damir Bird and Kadarius Hodge, if they should be in the Falcons mix in the future as we continue today's Locked On Falcons. But guys, the NFL playoffs are here, and I'm excited to tell you about the new sports betting partner here for Locked On, and that is, of course, the number one sports book in America. That's FanDuel, number one podcast network, number one sports book coming together. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have many great features that make betting fun and easy. New customers, if you join today and get started with a $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet, just sign up at fanduel.com/lockedon. And FanDuel is a favorite place to bet money line, and it gets the spread, and you can get a bigger payout by getting those same game parlays. And of course, this weekend we got a lot of great action. I'm looking at some of these lines over at FanDuel this weekend to bet for the NFL playoffs. And you know, the great thing about FanDuel, I can do it all on the app. It's safe, it's secure, it's super easy to use. So don't miss out. Place your first $5 bet and get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at fanduel.com/lockedon. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. So, guys, I want to thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day. And, of course, for your second listen, check out the Locked On NFL podcast to get the daily conversations on the biggest NFL stories, available on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. So, talking about Olamide Zaccheaus, you know, he kind of, not to the same degree, but had kind of the opposite season of Drake London, right? Like, he was very productive when Mariota was the starter, and then his production fell off a cliff when Desmond Ridder became the starter, right? So, like, you look at that. When Mariota was targeting Olamide Zaccheaus for the first 13 games, his passer rating was 123, right? When Desmond Ridder was targeting Olamide Zaccheaus, it was 74, right? You look at his yards per route run under Mariota, it was 1.87. Under Ridder, it was 0.52 to finish with a final number of about 1.47, which is right around where, like, Mohamed Sanu finished a lot of his years. I think Sanu's best year was 2017 with 1.62. And to me, that Sanu comp makes a lot of sense to me, because the other thing that Zaccheaus did that Sanu also did was being that sort of reliable chain mover on third and fourth downs. Like, when you looked at Zaccheaus's passer rating when targeted on third and fourth downs, when Mariota was a starter, it was 30 points higher when the Falcons were targeting Zaccheaus on those critical downs than it was for Kyle Pitts, 50 points higher than it was for Drake London. Now, we didn't see that translate over when Ridder took over the starter, although in the second half of the Bucs game, you started to see that. So it gives you some confidence that maybe it took, the better part of four games before they started getting on the same page, but maybe where they finished off is where they can pick up back next year. And, you know, the other thing that stands out about Zaccheaus' season was how much more explosive he was this year than he was in previous years. And frankly, he was the team's most explosive receiver for most of the year. Up until the final two games of the season, he led the team in explosive plays, those 20-plus yard plays, with 9. Then in the last 2 weeks, London and Algier eventually passed him, and both of those guys finished with 10 explosive plays. But I think when you look at that third down reliability, that, you know, explosiveness that he does bring to the table, you know, that goes back to, I think, a conversation I had with Jarvis Davis at some point in December, talking about, you know, I thought Zaccheaus quietly had a very good season for the Falcons, and those were the two big reasons. And I thought at that time, you know, if the Falcons got better quarterback play, he'd be a lot more productive. You know, that didn't quite translate to Desmond Ridder taking over. And so maybe that soured my opinion a little bit on that notion. But I do think when we talk about Olamide Zaccheaus, we can put him in that tier with guys like Russell Gage and Mohamed Sanu and Harry Douglas as capable number threes. I think he showed enough this year, even if it wasn't consistently so, that he is on a similar level as some of those guys. And so I think that means that he should be brought back by the Falcons as an impending free agent. But the issue is always going to be price when it comes to free agency. And I look around the league and I see, like, a lot of number three receivers going for about $3 to $8 million a year in that range. And probably you had asked me in November, I would have said, yeah, give him $7 million, right, on the upper end of that range. And then maybe after the bye, at the end of the season, maybe that number lowers maybe closer to $4 million or something like that, because of him not finishing the season as strong as I want. But I still think he's a good third option at wide receiver. And again, I know things are kind of muddy with the Falcons and who's a number one, two, three receiver because of the presence of Kyle Pitts. We're talking exclusively about wide receivers today, guys. So when I say number three receiver, I mean the third wide receiver, not the third option in a passing attack. And I think it's similar to what we've gone through with other players when a guy like a Zaccheaus is higher than that third option at wide receiver, right? We saw that last year with Russell Gage, who was a number three and then had to be more than that in 2021. And you didn't see the Falcons offense play particularly well. I don't think that's a coincidence. You go back to 2013 when Harry Douglas had to be more than a number three in the Falcons offense. Again, not a coincidence, did not play particularly well. Now that wasn't really an issue for Mohamed Sanu when he was here because, you know, you had Julio Jones. But to me, what's notable is you look at the 3 years of Sanu, you know, you can argue in 2016, Taylor Gabriel was kind of the number two. And in 2018, Calvin Ridley was kind of the number two. And the 1 year where Sanu was truly the number two of those 3 years, the Falcons offense took a downward tick in that particular year. So it is one of those things where I think all of these guys are ideally number threes. And once you have to push them up the depth chart, it doesn't usually reflect well on the overall offense. And I think that was the case here this past season with the Falcons. And so, again, I think finding that upgrade and finding that guy that you don't have to feel like is you know, not capable of being that number two is going to be something that the Falcons need to look forward to finding this offseason and in future offseasons. But we'll talk more about that as we continue today's episode. But like, let's talk a little bit about the other two impending free agents, Damir Byrd and Kadarius Hodge, right? And I think both of those guys did what they needed to do to return next year. But similar to Zacchaeus, I don't know if they should be expected to have bigger roles than what they have. I think Byrd is a solid number four guy, similar to the conversation we were just having with Zacchaeus when he's been asked to be more than that in the offense, like in 2019 with the Cardinals, 2020 with the Patriots, 2020 with the Bears. Those offenses have not been high-end offenses. So, like, to me, in a good offense, Damir Byrd is no higher than fourth in the depth chart. And obviously that's the goal that we want to build here in Atlanta. I think Kadarius Hodge is an ideal number five, right? He made some clutch plays on offense, had a season high, career high, I mean, of 13 catches and over 200 yards receiving. You know, Byrd had similar numbers with more yardage due to some more of those explosive plays. And I think both of those guys, that's kind of what you're looking for. You're not looking for guys that are going to catch more than, you know, 15 or 20 passes in a given season. And if they are catching more than that, that probably means something has gone wrong for your offense. But I think both of those guys have earned new contracts to be, you know, on veteran minimum type of deals, maybe because of Hodge's value as a special teams player, arguably your best special teams player. Maybe you can give him a multi-year deal that's a little bit more than a veteran minimum, like, say, I don't know, $5 million over 3 years or something like that. But I think with Byrd, you're certainly looking at a veteran minimum type of deal. If he takes that, great. You have great continuity at that position. If he doesn't, I think he's probably the caliber of receiver that you feel like is pretty replacement. Level or replaceable in that regard. So I feel like if the Falcons can retain those three free agents in OZ, Byrd, and Hodge, you kind of have your 3, 4, and 5 receivers secured for next year, right? And if London is your number one, then that leads to the question of, okay, who's going to be that number two? And that's, I think, something that the Falcons are going to have to address this offseason. We'll talk more about that coming up. But to finish talking about the young receivers in the back end of depth chart, you do have some young players that you, I think, are worthwhile bringing to camp next summer, like Frank Darby, Jared Bernhardt, Josh Ali, Rashawn Henry, all on future deals that can compete for a job. And if one of those guys makes a leap, maybe that pushes a guy like Damir Byrd off the roster. And I think a lot of us are looking at, say, you know, a certain Bernie Sanders, you know, to make that leap potentially next year. And if they don't make that leap, then it's no big deal. You're not relying on it. You know, you can still sort of take whoever the best of those guys is and stash him as your number six receiver and make him inactive most weeks. And then the other guys can be on the practice squad competing for spots there. So that to me is kind of the plan. Like the back end, the bottom half of your depth chart at wide receiver seems pretty set, but it's that number two spot. And, you know, what do we need in that number two spot? What are we looking for in that number two spot? And to me, the answer to that is explosiveness, explosiveness, explosiveness. And we'll get into exactly why that is coming up on today's episode. But guys, got to go ahead and plug the other Locked On Sports Atlanta shows for your second listen. Check out Locked On Braves, Locked On Hawks, Locked On Bulldogs, ATL Day Ones, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, all available on the same podcast platforms that you're currently watching or listening, Locked On Falcons, including on Roku and Amazon Fire TV. So, guys, wrapping up today's episode, talking about the looking for that number two receiver, again, we're sort of operating under the assumption that Drake London is going to be our number one. And again, because he can kind of be moved around, play inside, outside, you know, I think that does inform sort of what we're looking for as that number two spot, right? Again, because we're hoping, you know, maybe that Drake London could be that dominant inside player. So now you're kind of looking for that dominant outside player. And when we're talking about that guy that's a dominant outside player, we're usually talking about that guy that can add explosive plays by getting vertical down the field, getting a deep threat, right? And when I say deep threat, I know a lot of people focus on deep, right? As a guy that can make plays down the field. And we got plenty of those guys that can make plays down the field. Bird can do it. Pitts can do it. Ozy can do it. London can do it. Patterson as well. Those guys have all shown that they can make plays down the field. But I think the key word is not deep. It's threat, right? Meaning that you have somebody that legitimately threatens defenses and changes how they play because of his verticality, right? And I think it's self-evident why that's important, because I think being explosive in the NFL matters. You can look around the league and see the who are the final four teams, right? And look at how explosive they were. You know who the top three most explosive teams were this year in 20-plus yard plays? Kansas City, Philadelphia, San Francisco. Now, Cincinnati is one of the other final four teams, and they finished 17th in explosive plays this year. But I don't think anybody's questioning Cincinnati's potential to be explosive. And I know Falcon fans are certainly not questioning their ability to be explosive, given what they did, the awful things that they did to our secondary in week 7. So even if the plays weren't there, you have four teams that you can make the argument are the four most fearsome explosive teams in the league that are the final four teams. And longtime listeners have heard me harp over and over and over again about the importance of explosiveness. But I'm sure there's a couple of you guys that are relatively new here. And I want to remind you sort of my core thesis when it comes to why explosiveness matters in the NFL, right? Explosiveness is not really the end-all be-all to winning football games, right? Especially in the regular season, right? But I think it really matters in January. I think it becomes a much more important for you in January. And I could point to plenty of stats, like some that I've already pointed out today, but another one, like say you look at the teams that made the 14 teams that made the playoffs this year, 9 of those teams finish in the upper half of the league in terms of explosiveness. But I think the other thing that's important to point out about those 14 playoff teams is 10 out of those teams also finish in the upper half of the league in terms of third down defensive efficiency, getting stops on third downs. And so the reason why explosiveness is important in January is because when you're facing quality defenses, like you often are in the month of January, putting together these long 10 plus play drives is going to be increasingly harder in January than it is from September through December, right? And so that's where you need chunk plays in order to move the ball against quality defenses, because they're going to get stops. They're going to get stops on third downs. They're going to get stops in the red zone, all that and more. And so that to me is something that it's important that you got to keep your eye on the prize when it comes to the Falcons rebuild, because the emphasis is on the word build in rebuild, because, you know, we got to build towards something, right? The goal is to build towards that team that can be one of these final four teams, these championship caliber football teams that will be playing this upcoming weekend. Now, we also know why getting that deep threat makes sense for the Falcons is because they are a run-first team, right? They're not going to be the Chiefs. They're not going to be the Bengals. They're not going to be one of those teams. But they are a run-first team. And what do defenses do when they face run-first teams? They say, well, our priority is we got to stop the Falcons' run, because that's the foundation of what they do, all that and more. And so what do teams do? They stack the box to stop the run. So guess what? That leaves your number one receiver, your number two receiver, often one-on-one on the outside, right? Because they bring that extra safety down in the box to give you that eighth man in the box. And that single high safety in the middle of the field can't really help those outside receivers in major ways unless he's Earl Thomas or that type of player. And so now you get one-on-ones, and if you have a field-stretching vertical threat, all of a sudden now you can start burning teams in a major way when they do that. And so then what happens, you know, what teams do when they're worried about giving up the deep ball? They do the same things they do against the Chiefs and the Bengals. They play two high shells, two deep safeties that gives both of our outside corners more help so that we don't give up those big plays on the outside down the field. But guess what that does? It means you lighten the box. You're only playing with 6 and 7 man boxes more often than not, because that safety is 15, 20 yards away from the line of scrimmage. And so what do teams like the Falcons do in that situation? They run it down your throat. It's a pick your poison type of offense. When you have that vertical speed on the outside that can threaten defenses that way, you can threaten defenses in a major way. And, you know, It's just basically like, do you want to get thrown on? You want to give up the chunk play? Or do you want to have the ball run down your throat? Either way, the Falcons are more than happy to oblige to do that. So when I look at what the Falcons are looking for at that number two receiver spot, obviously, like, the ideal options are this sort of elite, you know, vertical threats, the Tyreek Hills, the DeSean Jacksons, the Will Fullers. You can throw a DK Metcalf type of player in that, someone who truly puts, you know, the fear of God in cornerbacks when it comes, like, if this guy gets by me, right? Julio Jones was that guy for us, right? And so we'll see how this offseason stacks up, or whether or not the Falcons have an opportunity to get those guys, right? The draft is going to be probably hard for the Falcons to find that caliber of vertical threat, because typically the NFL understands the need for verticality and explosiveness. And so they typically value those guys. They typically are top 50 picks. You know, the Henry Ruggs, the Jalen Waddles, you know, you look at a player like Tennessee's Jalen Hyatt this year, probably going to be a top 50 pick because of how much teams value, you know, verticality. And so, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say the Falcons should take a wide receiver or an explosive vertical threat with one of their two picks in the top 50 at 8 or 44. But if they were to say, let's say a Jalen Wyatt is there at 44 and the Falcons were to pull the trigger on that guy, I wouldn't be as upset as other people probably would be. Oh my God, we didn't draft another pass catcher, because I'd be like, Oh, the Falcons actually get it. Oh, they understand what they need to do and what they need to be. And so I wouldn't be that upset over that selection, but I don't think that's going to necessarily be a priority. We'll see if the draft, you know, brings about maybe some mid-round guys. Maybe there's a Terry McLaurin type of guy that you can get in the third round or so, the fourth round or so, that you can develop into that guy and can turn into that type of threat down the road. Terry McLaurin's a good example of a third round receiver that has turned into, you know, a number one that has the ability to take the top off of defenses. Free agency is obviously going to be another avenue for the Falcons to attack and fill that number two spot. Miko Hardman is a burner type of guy that's going to be potentially available. I think there's going to be a lot of people talking about, hey, well, doesn't Miko Hardman fit exactly what you're talking about? And I'd be like, yeah, Miko Hardman certainly brings the speed element that I'm looking for. The issue with Miko Hardman is basically he hasn't been that productive as a vertical threat in Kansas City. And one imagines that's probably the best environment to you know, display your vertical capabilities in a major way. So I wouldn't necessarily buy the notion that he'll be unlocked in Atlanta if he wasn't unlocked in Kansas City. But certainly he's going to add much more in that arena, even if he isn't sort of on the Tyreek Hill level or the Will Fuller level, et cetera, than what the Falcons currently have that position. So he makes a ton of sense. But if being honest with you guys, if I was a betting man, and I was to bet who's going to line up as that number two receiver opposite Drake London come week one, I don't think it's going to be this sort of burner speed threat type of guy. I think it's more than likely the Falcons are going to go back to the well of adding another big wide receiver, right? They tried it with Bryan Edwards. That did not work out this past season. And so I'm looking at a couple of names that's been thrown out there. Alan Lazard, Corey Davis, who is expected to get cut by the Jets this past year, basically was that number two receiver for Arthur Smith in Tennessee opposite AJ Brown. Those are more likely guys that I would, if I was betting, it's probably more likely the Falcons will target someone like that to be that number two. And while those guys certainly probably bring more to the table in terms of being a vertical threat than, you know, alternative options that the Falcons have, which is nothing at this point in time, other than Lamide Zaccheaus, no offense to him. You know, that's probably not the ideal guy in what we're talking about, but they can help, you know, make you take at least a half step or a full step towards bringing more verticality in the offense. Another name that someone asked me, I can't remember if it was on Twitter or the Discord, someone asked me about, you know, what about making a move for Brandon Cooks? And, you know, certainly if the offseason went a certain way and we weren't able to get that guy, you know, in free agency and the draft didn't fall exactly that way, and Brandon Cooks is still, you know, being shot by the Texans come like day three of the draft, and the Falcons with two, I think, fourth round picks, like, I wouldn't be against the idea of sending the Texans one of those day three picks, such as the fourth round pick for Brandon Cooks, to sort of kick the tires on him for a year or two and see what he can do in that role and bring some of that speed to the outside position. So I think the Falcons will have options to upgrade their number two. Whether or not they get that true ideal burner that we're talking about is the ideal candidate, I think remains to be seen. But I certainly think the more important point is whether or not the Falcons get that guy is not necessarily going to be something that, you know, oh, that, it's a failure of an offseason if the Falcons don't find that burner. but it is something I think everybody should be on the lookout for. Like, if you come across a guy where you're watching, you know, your YouTube cutups or whatever, and you're like, oh, this guy brings the speed. Oh, whoa, let's get that guy. So if it's not acquired this offseason, I certainly think one of these big guys can get us through, you know, as a stopgap option as we look for more opportunities to find that true burner on the outside in the future. So not something that I would sit here and say is a huge, huge priority that has to be addressed this offseason. I think the Falcons do have to upgrade their number two spot, but, you know, ideally they get that burner type. But again, it's going to be hard to get that guy because the NFL values those guys so highly. So if you're not prepared to use a first or second round pick on that type of player, you know, it's going to be much harder for you to find that type of player. So we'll see how that goes, guys. But that's going to do it for us here on our wide receiver positional review of the Falcons 2022 group. Again, we got the number one. I think we got the 3, 4, and 5 and possibly 6 or whatever. We just got to find that number two. So that will do it for us here. We'll continue keeping this year in offensive review week rolling, potentially tomorrow with the tight end position. Obviously, we're still waiting with bated breath to see if the Falcons get that defensive coordinator higher. So obviously, if that move is made sooner versus later or other big news is made, we can certainly zig and zag towards that by the end of the week. So I'm hoping we'll get something on that front by the end of the week. We may have a guest on to talk about that later in the week as well. So we'll just sort of keep this year in positional review train a chugging as long as there isn't other bigger news that we need to discuss this week here on Locked On Falcons. So please make us your first listen. And for your second listen, check out Locked On NFL. Checked out Locked On Braves, Locked On Sports Atlanta, Locked On Hawks, Locked On Bulldogs, all part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.